Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. There are many worthwhile causes to donate to, and unfortunately also some scams out there. Our consumer protection experts are here to help figure out which charitable solicitations are legit, which ones to avoid. Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, great to have you back.
Nice to see you, Larry.
Good to see you. And Michelle Reinen, who directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection as well. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here.
It's always better if I turn your microphone on, too. We got you on now, Michelle. Tell you what, I hope you have a question for us. If you do, maybe you got a comment, maybe something's happened to you. Call in the consumer protection area, at least. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Well, certainly in the last few days, we've heard quite a bit in the news about identity theft involving card skimmers at gas stations. Sandy, you want to talk about that? How does this work?
Sure. Part of the responsibilities of our agency include inspecting gas dispensers, making sure they dispense accurately and that consumers get what they pay for. In the past, we've talked on this show about skimmers being found on ATMs, yeah, especially in southeast Wisconsin. But while there have been reports of gas pump skimmers in neighboring states, we really had not seen that here in Wisconsin. And of course, all of our inspectors visit every gas station at least once a year to just to do the regular inspection. They all have been trained on what to look for, what a skimmer looks like. So we've been communicating, of course, with the industry, the gas station industry, and they've been looking for these as well. Well, one of our gas station owners opened the pump one day and saw a skimmer. This has been several weeks ago, immediately reported it to law enforcement, which prompted us to work with our local municipal weights and measures inspectors to do a sweep of the entire state. And as soon as we started to see a pattern here, we let the public know, hey, this is something that is on the rise in Wisconsin, and here are some things you need to be looking out for.
Okay, and can I tell if I go to the...
Well, that's the thing. Probably not. The skimmers take a couple of forms. One is an external skimmer that fits right over the card reader on the pump. But the other is completely internal, and of course you would have no way of knowing that.
Wow.
Some of the skimmers read your card information via Bluetooth. So the absolute best way you have to protect yourself is closely monitoring your credit card statements, bank statements. You may want to pay inside for a while. I mean, that's the safest way right now. But I want people to know that we're working very closely with local police departments, our own inspectors, the service station industry, the FBI, and the IRS are also involved because we want to get on top of this very, very quickly. And if you have any criminals who are your listeners, Larry, I want them to know that we will find you and have you arrested. I saw in the news this morning that a couple were arrested in Brookfield yesterday.
Oh.
So we're already quickly catching up with these crooks.
Yeah, and there were, I just know from Madison, there were a half a dozen or something
right,
like that,
right.
Gas stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're at a gas station, if you happen to see any marks that, you know, around the lock on the dispenser, it looks like they, you know, there was some tampering there.
So that's
let
how
the
they
station
do it.
Owner know immediately.
Yeah. Okay. Well, something else to worry about.
Yeah, it never stops.
1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. There's another troubling financial crime we've been hearing about, and that's the ransomware. And we have talked about this a little bit on the show, but I think that one is bears repeating.
Yeah. As we walked in the door to your studio, I happened to get another email notification from the FBI on the scam. And we've heard from a lot of your listeners who have had a message on their computer screen saying, your files are locked up, you have to pay us a certain amount in ransom. Sometimes they ask for payment via Bitcoin, which is extremely difficult to trace back. And then the latest variation on this is seeing a pop-up message, and then it may be followed up by a phone call. The FBI is asking people to report these instances of ransomware directly to them because they're trying to connect dots here and get on top of this. They're asking that victims report this, whether a consumer or a business, to this website. It's ic3.gov. The letters IC, the numeral 3.gov. Okay. In the first 3 months of this year, the FBI says they extorted $209 million from businesses, schools, consumers, and at one point, the estimate is that this was infecting 100,000 computers a day, which is reflected by the number of calls we've gotten from your listeners on this.
And maybe, KP, we can put this up on our Facebook page, it's ic3.gov. We'll post that up on our Facebook page as well so people can, they forget, they can go to our page and find that information. Oh, boy. Well, Charlie in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to say about the skimmers that another way to get around them skimming your number without you knowing is to always pay your gas, say, in an irregular number, say, ending in 20 cents or 30 cents. And if you do that, you'll know that if ever you find a gas charge that's not fitting the number you've chosen, someone's stolen your number at a gas station. Thanks.
I hadn't thought about it. You know, I'm one of these people that just sits there and squeezes to get some sort of an even number. That makes a little sense.
Well, if that works for him to monitor his credit card statement, that's the big takeaway there, is one thing that consumers can do in this case, if they can't spot the skimmer, is to make sure that they're monitoring their finances and looking for irregularities or charges that weren't made by them, and then contacting their credit card company to report those, and not waiting for the credit card company to notice the irregularities that way. So that would be a trick that one could use to make sure they know when they made those charges, or keeping your receipts and asking for it at the pump so you can then just cross-reference your records.
Makes good sense. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Kind of quiet this morning. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. If you got something that happened to you that you'd like to talk about in the way of consumer scams, I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. You know, I kind of got a deal on a rental car a month back or so, and it was almost too good to be true, but it turned out to be okay. And we had a wonderful time in Florida and used that car for several days and paid exactly what we thought we were going to have to pay. Some people have discovered that rental cars in some cases access their personal information when they connect their phone to the rental car's information system. Have you heard about what types of information are being accessed or stolen?
So one of the first pieces of information that could be stolen is your GPS, where you've traveled to, where you've made stops. And this could be friends and family members that you've gone to go visit with. And you may not want that information being passed along. Depending upon how you've connected your mobile device and what your security settings were and what you've authorized or allowed to leak out of your device to this infotainment system is your call and message message logs or your contacts and text messages. And so the next person who gets that car could receive all that information, or possibly someone who is working at the rental facility could be downloading that information and then using that. So you want to make sure that you're deleting the data before you return the car, and other people can view that. You want to make sure your security settings are set appropriately on your phone. And if you're just using it to charge, don't hook it up to the infotainment center or the computer system that way. Just use the USB plug port or the cigarette lighter to just do the basic charging there instead of connecting it to another data source that can be linked that way.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Donald in Columbus has something next. Hi, Donald. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Just a quick question. You mentioned earlier the .gov website to report ransomware.
Yeah.
I wonder if this would apply to telemarketers also who say, you know, the robocall that says, you've got a court case against you. Press 1 to clear this up. Should we report those to that same website or not?
Yeah.
You can report those to us, and we collect that information and share it with appropriate federal entities. And you can file online at datcp.wi.gov. We work with the Federal Trade Commission on the robocalling robocallers, helping them connect dots and track these people down.
So it's datcp.wi.gov.
Right.
And you can also call. Can you call?
You can. We have a toll-free number. It's 800-422-7128, and we have it staffed during regular business calls or regular business hours. If you call during the evening, somebody will get back to you the next day.
There we go. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Donald. Appreciate your call. And we'll, if we don't have them already up on our Facebook page, I'm sure we do, but we'll make sure they're up on the Facebook page too. Let's turn to Carrie next in Greenfield. Hi, Carrie. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering, why can't we require gas station owners to do a daily inspection on their pumps? I personally would probably not recognize something that's been a pump that's been tampered with. I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Well, we certainly do recommend that station owners open their pumps daily and look inside them to check for skimmers. Station owners have a number of ways to monitor what's going on at their stations, and as you know, many of them have surveillance cameras, and that footage has been very helpful to local police in catching these people. It only takes a few seconds to install one of these, unfortunately, and they're catching the crooks when they come back after a day or two to remove them. So they most likely don't leave them in the gas pump for days and days. It's a quick in and out deal.
Oh, that's what they do.
We are reviewing our state laws to see whether there's any additional kinds of protections that we can put in place that way also.
Thanks for that question. Appreciate it very much. Taking a look at consumer protection issues today with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. KP Whaley, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will talk to an animal lover who's on a mission to change how we interact with animals. That at 2 today. Right now, taking a look at consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers. Again, you can join in. Open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's go to Vernon next in Shawano. Vernon, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. And thanks for a wonderful job you do helping the public. What I was calling, Larry, I was going to write you a letter, and when things have happened, I just brought my wife home from the hospital this morning. So, okay. I saw you on the, heard you on the radio, and that was wonderful. What I'm talking about is mail rebates, particularly with the liquor industry. You go in and you say, you know, you buy this bottle or you buy two bottles and you can get a $5 rebate or some such thing. I'm very particular that I follow all the rules, because when I first started sending these rebates in, and I don't drink that much, by the way, it could be on other things, but basically on the liquor, I found this. They say, well, you didn't send your cash receipt in. Well, first of all, you have to send the original, not a copy. I make a copy of it on my printer so that I know what I'm doing. But when I send the original off and they say I didn't do it, I'm dead in the water, Larry. And I've found this to be so many times, and it's always with a particular area.
Well, that's interesting. Michelle, you want to talk about that for a minute?
We do get complaints from consumers that maybe don't get what they think they should based on a rebate. But Vernon's right. They're very particular about how you qualify for a rebate. And as long as they're disclosing all of that information of what you need to do to qualify for the rebate, and then following that, we don't really have an action. So consumers, if they want to take advantage and all the information's been disclosed as to what they need to do, they need to follow that. And I know there'd be a concern about mailing an original receipt, but, you know, keep your copy if you need it for your financial records. And you could always likely cross out the credit card number, the four digits on the bottom. If you've followed a rebate to the T and you're not getting it, file a complaint with us so we can take a look at that and contact the company about them not honoring the rebates that they're promoting, because it becomes a deal with a solicitation, a promotion that we would be looking at that way. But there's no specific rebate law in place.
So you could, but you could file a complaint, Vernon, and I'd go ahead and do it. Why not? Especially, this sounds like it's happened multiple times and not just once. I would go to that datcp.wi.gov. You can get a form there, or you just want to call at 800-422-7128. Request one, they'll send it to you, and you should go ahead and file it. Especially, you know, once, okay, but...
Right, there might be a pattern there that we want to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bob in Franklin up next. Bob, hi, thank you for calling.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. My situation is I paid for prescription medication at a pharmacy, and when I got the bill, there were two charges for the same pharmacy on the same day. The amounts were like one penny apart, and of course only one of them was correct. When I complained to the pharmacy, they said the charge card company did that. So then I called the charge card company, and they said the pharmacy did it.
Yeah.
But the charge card company did say they would dispute the charge.
Okay.
So that's kind of a strange situation.
You comment on that?
Yeah, it sounds like he handled that exactly right. And the dispute on the charge sets into play a process that's set by federal law. So he's exercising his rights under federal law to dispute the charge. And I assume that the credit card company now will work behind the scenes with the pharmacy to figure out what is going on here. If you'd like to, you could also file a complaint with us, and we could also communicate with the pharmacy as well and see if we can get them to adjust your bill for you.
Yeah, it's probably worth it. But you're right, I think, based on Sandy and what you've said in past shows, Bob did exactly the right thing.
Right. You have a relatively short time frame to let the credit card company know you're disputing the charge. and then they'll take care of it from there. They'll do an internal review and some research and get back to you with their determination.
Yeah,
but in our experience, they've really done well by the consumers.
Yeah, I've had to have my car changed twice, as a matter of fact, because of charges that were, the credit card company said, "Oh, we're knocking that off, that charge off, but we also want you to change your card,
so just in case,
so that doesn't happen again." So I've had, I mean, it's a little inconvenient, but on the other hand, you don't want somebody with access to your card.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. So, Bob, thanks again for calling. Phyllis in Oneida, it's your turn. Hi, Phyllis. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question. I know some people who purchased a specially made sort of like a mobile home type thing.
Yeah.
You pull with a big truck. And anyway, when it was delivered, the thing was... had a number of defections, and one of it was some kind of a part that should extend out, didn't work right. And so the manufacturer had the purchaser start making payments, and then the manufacturer sent it to someone else to repair it, and then supposedly the insurance company is supposed to pay for the repair. It seems to me that would be legal. Is that legal?
Instead of the company that manufactured it, they're
right,
turning
right.
it to... Did they turn it over to your friend's insurance?
I don't know.
It seems kind of strange. If they tried to turn it over to the friend's insurance, that I would think would... The insurance company would not go along with that, would they?
That would be concerning if they did that. Yeah. And I would think the insurance company would just, flat out turn it down if they didn't have anything to do with it. To sort that out, I would suggest that your friend file a complaint if they're not getting anywhere. It depends on the purchase contract. It sounds like it was... the description custom made, so that doesn't go into any kind of sold as is situation
right there.
And are they selling defective product the way the regulations work there and contract law? But I would, for mediation purposes and trying to open up those lines of communication, file that complaint with us, and we can make some contacts and see where things are at.
I mean, if the company that manufactured it has some deal with its own insurance company, that's a different thing.
Right. Or if it damaged in transporting it, maybe it was manufactured fine, but in the transport something bent or broke.
But then again, it wouldn't be her friend's insurance company's that would do it for sure. So advise her to file a complaint then.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can do that online at datcp.wi.gov or calling 1-800-422-7128, and a form can be mailed out.
Yeah, yep. Thanks again for calling. Cliff in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn.
Oh, I just wanted to report when I had a landline, I got one of the robocalls that I was being audited by the IRS, and the sheriff was coming to send money, and I knew right away it was a scam, but I wanted to just play it out. So, I said, okay, I'll go to the bank, get the money, and run right down to the IRS, and they said, no. And you have to do a bank draft. And to make a long story short, I ended up with a woman at the end. This is maybe 4 telephone calls later. And I had said that I had to get this money. My family would be out on the street because of it. And, a very big story. And the woman was finally, she was brought to tears. She was sobbing. She said this is her only job that she has to support her family. And, she kind of gave me a little sketch of her life. And, she wasn't proud of what she was doing, but it was her living. She wouldn't tell me where she was. So It was just an interesting, it was a slow day at the office.
Well, that's interesting. Cliff, we also got an email from Doug, who was also got the same phone call or a similar one from the IRS, supposedly the IRS, and then he actually lists the number that they left for him to call, which I won't give out over the air, but it's the last number there. It's that number is probably not even working right now.
No, probably not. This is probably the most common robocall fraud out there over the last couple of years or so, these fake IRS calls. It's kind of interesting to listen to people's stories when they play along with the robocallers, but we always recommend just hanging up because he's likely to be pestered by more calls. And this woman, now that she may believe that she's established a relationship with him, and she may call him back on his office phone line repeatedly. So we strongly recommend just hanging up on the robocalls.
Yeah.
And if it's a live caller and likely a fraudulent of a fraudulent nature, hang up as well.
Yeah, the IRS never calls. You've said
if they do, they will send a letter first and set up an appointment to talk to you. So whenever you receive an unsolicited phone call or email from somebody claiming to be from the IRS, it's a scam.
And pure and simple. Cliff, thanks.
The coolest one was my 90-year-old mother-in-law who got a call. You know, a young man, hysterical. It was her grandson. He was in jail, sent money. And it took a few minutes for my mother-in-law to realize that indeed was a scam call. But she wasn't 100% sure. And it came in the evening, and it kind of chewed on her all night after she hung up after several minutes. And what if it really was David? And it was so upsetting to her, just, terribly cruel.
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, a lot of this fraud that is perpetrated via telephone is there. The crooks are counting on you wanting to take some kind of immediate action, which usually involves sending them money. So we like to encourage people, if you get an urgent plea for money, via phone or email, no matter who the person says they are, talk to someone first before sending money, because the chances are if you send money, you aren't going to get it back.
Yeah, there you go. Annabelle in Fort Atkinson, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I have a comment about a call that came to my house earlier this week, and I suspect it was a robocall. All I heard was a part of the last part of the call. And what I heard was something about liability. And in order to avoid a liability, a person should call a certain number. Now, I was not going to, I did not respond, and I don't think anybody should, and I don't know that this was planned this way, but a call that you only get a tail end of it, and it talks about that, might leave you more curious to respond than you ought.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks, Annabelle. Comment on that one?
That's an excellent. Michelle? It's an excellent point. Sandy talked about the scare tactics and the playing on emotion, and we've seen there's a warrant out for your arrest. The cops are going to come get you. Liability, being sued, and your finances at risk, all very scary things. And, oh no, what's going on? I better call back. So it's a great point to add on to that emotion that the scammers try and play on.
Yeah.
And her point about only hearing part of the recording, we don't know whether their computer software was out of sync or whether that's a deliberate tactic they're using. Now, what was that? A liability about what? I better call them back. So another tactic we've seen is where they'll call and then there's no message and people call back not knowing that the number they're dialing is a charge number and they'll be charged $19.99 or something for just dialing the number because it's an international deal. So, yeah, there's a lot of that's why I say just hang up.
Nancy and Sheldon, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello. In July, we got a bill on our telephone that was made from our number to Washington, the state of Washington.
Yeah.
And we knew that we didn't make it. When we checked, it was on Father's Day, and we weren't home, and there was nobody here, and it's just my husband and myself that live here. And so we called the phone company, and they are taking care of it, and it's still in progress. And then we received a call from the police department, or from the police department. It was a 911 and wanting to know what our emergency was. And I said, well, it was early in the morning. We don't have one. Well, she said the call came from your number. And so I investigated and called them, and they said, yes, the call came here. I says, well, we didn't place no call. So then the other day, the neighbor called and said that she was getting calls, and on her ID number, it comes up as our name and our number. And they are, some of them are from finance companies, some of them are from, she says, not anything that they're doing business with. And she had called and wanted to know if it was us that placed the call because it comes up with our name and our number.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Sandy, do you want to take that one?
Well, a couple of things. You did the right thing by calling your phone company and asking them to research into what's going on. I can think of a couple of things that might be happening. Number one, somebody's appropriated your phone number and is using it for fraudulent purposes. And we've talked a lot about how software is available and used by crooks to mask where they're calling from. And they frequently will use the phone number of a well-known company or just, you know, grab a number off the internet. They can use whatever number they want and to appear on the recipient's caller ID. There can be glitches in phone systems. That happened to my mother. She had to have her modem replaced. Her modem was automatically dialing hundreds of times a day and connecting with random numbers across the United States.
Oh my goodness.
Strange things like that can happen. But I think you've taken the right action by talking to your phone company. And if you don't hear back from them, call them again and ask what's going on. Because it sounds like it's getting worse.
Yeah, it definitely does. Thanks again for calling, Nancy. We have a few open lines. We're going to go to Lynn and Eau Claire next, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let us know what experiences you've had or questions you have about consumer protection issues. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Lynn now in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry, and good morning to your guests, too. I have it's strange to me. I use narcotics to get by, not to get high. Mm-hmm. And on several occasions, I've been shorted. I get 60 tablets. One time there were 18 missing, one time there were 10, and one time the entire hard copy just disappeared. I went to the pharmacy, and of course their numbers came up right. But there's no place for someone like me to. You can't complain. There's no proof, and you can't complain. What we do now is I insisted that they be counted out in front of either my husband or I when we pick them up. And you know, according to his Facebook friends, I'm not the only one who this has happened to. What can we do aside from counting, having them count out our meds when we pick them up, do to protect ourselves?
Yes.
What you've established by having them count in front of you, that's a great practice, so you're walking away okay. But the bigger picture here is I would report this to your local law enforcement, to your local police department or sheriff's department, especially given the types of drugs and narcotics we're looking at here. That could be a bigger issue, other than you're not getting what you're paying for here, and you'd want to report that to local law enforcement. Now, if you're ever shorted on account of something that's in a package that's not sold by pharmacy but some other type of package by count or quantity, we do bureaus of weights and measures, and we deal with short count, short weight issues that way. But this is a protected product that law enforcement needs to be involved with.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And I would complain.
I would call today.
I wouldn't wait. Thanks again. Ed in La Crosse, we'll get to you in just a second. By the way, you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here. My guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along as we take a look at consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Ed in La Crosse is up next with a comment. Ed, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I had an interesting situation where I placed a car for sale on Craigslist, and I was contacted through email, and they wanted to buy the car without looking at it or without taking for a test drive. And I asked them, well, what do you want to pay for it? And they said $3,600, which that's what I had it on Craigslist for. And he said that he was going to send me that, well, through email, he texted me. He said that he was going to send that check certified through the mail. And when I got the check, the cashier's check, or it was written from a credit union, it came in at $5,000. So right away I thought it was a scam anyway, because who's going to buy a used car without taking it for a test drive or at least looking at it? So anyway, I ended up taking it to my bank to have them look at it. Before that, I actually called the credit union, the number that was on the check that was sent to me, and they said that was a fraudulent check, that they had no list of it on their records. But I brought it to my bank, and the bank told me that they've seen a lot of these checks coming in. So I did the right thing. They were usually trying to get somebody to send a personal check or a cashier's check back to them for the difference.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty well explains it, doesn't it, Michelle?
It does. It's a great explanation of a check overpayment situation where they're willing to give you more. You cash it, you're out your good, and the money that you thought you were being deposited plus the extra that you gave in a refund. So it's a perfect case example.
Yeah,
we hear a lot about this, especially on Craigslist, and the crooks target high-dollar items like boats and cars. We've had some of this happen with farm machinery even, farm implements. So what we always recommend is that before you do business on Craigslist, you read through their fraud section about what they're seeing in terms of recent scams that are going on Craigslist.
Yeah, very, very interesting. We had Jolene sent us an email this morning. My mother thought she was calling the satellite TV company, but misdialed the first three digits from 800 to 888, which connected her to a company pressuring her to switch satellite TV companies. They wanted her social security number and other information to complete the transaction. Luckily, she did not agree to switch companies. She said her daughter needed to approve any changes. Certainly kind of a scam, a pressure sales to switch companies, and people should be aware of that.
Absolutely. It's like an imposter scam using the phone. So you find a like email, you use the same email but put .com on it rather than .org, or you're putting the .org instead of .gov on it, and you're not getting the entity you thought you were. And the phone number, same thing. They just put a different beginning extension onto it. You think you're calling one of the major satellite companies, and you get somebody who's trying to switch you for more money and catch you off guard because you're initiating this phone call. So it's really important to make sure that you're using reliable sources for making your contacts, a number off your phone bill, checking how you dialed, asking questions so you know you have a legitimate company.
Yeah.
I think we had a caller last month who brought up this point about how these fraudulent organizations take a phone number that's one or two digits different from the legitimate mm-hmm. phone number. And, of course, they do that on purpose to take advantage of situations like this.
Yeah, very, very interesting. We have Susan in Beaver Dam next. Hi, Susan.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you today?
I've got two questions. The first one is quick. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a no-call list issued for cell phones anytime in the near future. And also, my husband and I, a couple months ago, were up north at a restaurant, and when we went to pay our bill, the waitress brought a scanner right to our table, and she scanned it there. And we thought that was so neat, so we commented on it. And she said that's a state law in Wisconsin, that they do that now, but we haven't had that happen at any of the other restaurants we've ever been at. So I'm just wondering if that's actually a state law or not, and yeah. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling.
I haven't heard of that law, but it certainly is a best practice for consumers to keep your eyes on your credit card if possible, because you never know what goes on once they take it, you know, back into the kitchen or whatever. The rest of our question just went away, but
the cell phone list whether or not there would be a no call. So the Wisconsin Do Not Call list, you can put landlines or cell phones, any residential number per se, on that list and make sure that you don't receive telemarketer solicitations on those phone lines, and it would be issued. So you can do that at donotcall.gov and list your phone number. You can call from the number you want to put on the list, 1-888-382-1222, and you'd be able to make sure that number gets on the list.
So that is there. I've had, you know, I've gotten fewer of those. I think it was as a result of this show, one of the shows we did. I was getting so many. And then I finally started dropping or taking them off my do not call for that particular number. And so I've eliminated several of those. And that seems to have cut back. I mean, I still get them. I got one during the show 2 days ago.
Using the call blocking feature on your cell phone?
I blocked that's the proper term, the mm-hmm. call blocking feature. And it's easy to do. You do it in a couple seconds, and mm-hmm. you're at least not going to hear that number again.
I heard the other day that smartphones now, many of them have a feature that you can, like clicking your power button twice quickly will block a phone number. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's certainly worth looking in your manual or your instructions to see whether there's an easy key feature to block a phone number.
Yeah, there we go. Jerry in Menasha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm on all the state and federal do not call lists. However, I get robocalls, and someone recently suggested to me that I put my phone on the no-mo robo feature.
No-go robo.
No-mo robo. Feature.
Okay.
That's N-O-M-O-R-O-B-O. And then when one of these rotten calls comes in, my phone will ring once. That's all. And their number won't come up, and it's wiped out completely because the no-mo robo feature has hundreds and hundreds of phony phone numbers, and if it hits one of those, well, then it will not go on your phone, and you will not be bothered by some of the robotic calls that I've been getting like 4 and 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do have caller ID on my phone. I have a landline because my hands are too crippled to use a cell phone. So that's why I love my landline, and all I'm interested in is hearing from people I want to hear from, and that's it. So it has at least reduced my stress level, but I would like your guests to discuss the NoMo Robo feature.
Okay.
Sure. NoMo Robo is free software that works on phones that are voice over internet. It does not work if you have an old-fashioned copper wire, you know, hardwired phone. But if you have a phone that works with a modem, you can go online, I think it's nomorobo.com, and sign up your phone number. And the way it works is it basically blacklists phone numbers. And I think it's exactly as she said, your phone will ring once and then be done. There are lots of apps available for smartphones. We've talked about that, both iPhones and Android phones. It's kind of interesting to note, Larry, we've talked a lot about these robocalls and talked about the technology that makes them possible, and we've said in the end it's going to require some kind of technological solution to solve the problem.
Yeah.
Well, the Federal Communications Commission pulled together a list of CEOs from companies like Apple, Google, Samsung, Microsoft, and said, we're charging you with solving this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to come back in mid-October with some potential solutions. But none of us can figure out why it took the FCC so long to kind of the light
Get
bulb
on the,
go on.
Yeah.
But hopefully they'll come up with some good ideas here. And the important thing that's changed kind of behind the scenes and from the regulatory perspective is that at one point the FCC required that any phone call that was originated be completed. And it's since changed that that requirement. So now they're looking at things like blocking phone numbers. They know when hundreds of thousands of calls are being blocked from or being blasted from a number. We'll just shut that down.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things they're looking at, and hopefully we will all be rid of this robocall burden.
NoMo Robo is one of them, I guess. Huh? There's other ones out there.
Yeah, NoMo Robo is, I think, best known because it was part of a Federal Trade Commission prize a few years back, probably 3 or 4 years now. But as Sandy mentioned, I think the only downside is that right now it's only voice over internet protocol, the VoIP phones. She said those used with the modems versus the traditional landline. There you have to work with your individual carrier or buy an off-the-shelf type package that you would hook up to your phone where you'd start doing your own programming of numbers. And with these telemarketers constantly changing the number they're dialing from, that's really hard to keep up with.
So NoMoRobo.com, do you go
to? I think that's it.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's free.
And it's free. That's better yet. Rick in New Glarus, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. And I've got a landline, so NoMo Robo wouldn't have worked for this particular situation. But I'm sitting here listening to the great show, and lo and behold, out of the blue comes a call. It says it's a cell phone. So cell phones can be from various places, so I made the mistake of answering it. And it's a robocall offering a public opinion survey that's going to take place in Madison within the next several days to a week. I didn't note the exact number of days, but they're offering $225 to attend this public opinion survey and list a number to call and say, if you're interested in going to the survey to receive this stipend, call this number. No identification of any group or person that might be offering this, but just quickly and briefly offer the stipend of over $200 to attend a public opinion survey in Madison, and I just wondered if you've heard that. Normally, if your show wasn't on, I might have just discounted this and let it go on, but since you were there today, I decided to put it out there. If they're calling me today, they're probably calling others in the area, and I wonder if Sandy's heard about this and maybe could make some comments on it.
All right, Sandy,
well,
are you Michelle?
Not, I have not heard about that. A couple of things. First of all, it's illegal under federal law to send a robocall to any cell phone. So that's your first tip-off that this is probably not a legitimate phone call. But, you know, you may have realized, Larry, that we're in an election season, and the public opinion pollsters are finding it more and more difficult to find people to connect with to take their polls. And so I know that some of them are calling cell phones, so just be aware of that. That's not illegal for you to receive a call from a live pollster. But a robocall to your cell phone is very problematic.
Yeah. And sometimes, for you know, just knowing, having done a lot of research myself, there are often times in recent years, researchers will offer some money as an inducement to get somebody to respond. However, there's usually much more identification where you're calling, you know, from the University of Wisconsin, we're conducting this survey and give information on where people can check if they want to. And that doesn't sound like that was the case here. And it was a robocall, which is illegal to begin with. So there you go.
Right. One of the things I'd really appreciate if Rick would be willing to do is to call our hotline at 1-800-422-7128. Talk to one of our staff persons and have them transfer you to Michelle's voicemail and tell them I asked to do that so you can leave me a detailed message with the information.
And we'll be back right after the news. Taking a look at consumer scams today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. Our lines are all filled right now. The number is 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Randy in Fond du Lac next. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening earlier before the lunch to Sandy, speaking about callers calling in about these gas pump skimming devices.
Yeah.
And it was kind of frustrating to, I was intently listening, and because I wanted to be able to know exactly what I was looking at, if I step up to a gas pump, I understand from Sandy's comments that the criminals put a device on the outside of the gas pump by the card reader, and do I understand that there's no way that we can see that that's there?
There's two different ways I think you talked about, Sandy.
Yeah, there's one that fits right over the real card reader, and if you you can kind of gently try to move it back and forth, and you don't want to rip off, you know, the existing card reader. But if it's a fake, it will move, and you may see some pressure tape that it's mounted on. So that's one way to detect the external reader. But it is frustrating, and it's very difficult to identify the internal devices because it's inside the pump and a consumer never sees what's inside the gas pump. So we're asking station owners, of course, to be vigilant and check the insides of their pumps on a daily basis. And then consumers have a couple of options, either pay inside, pay with cash, or check your credit card statements, financial statements, whatever you use.
Yeah, there you go. And I guess you did say that sometimes there might be some scratch marks and so forth around the lock.
Yeah, every pump or dispenser has a lock on it, and the criminals tamper with the locks to get inside. So there may be some kinds of implement markings, scratches around that lock. Some pumps have a pressure seal, like a piece of tape, that lets you know if the dispenser's been open, that tape is broken. That's another thing you can look for. But just be vigilant, keep your eyes open, and if there's any question at all, just pay by cash. That's the easiest thing to do at this point.
There we go. Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it. Brad in Avoca, your turn now. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have not so much a scam, but what I feel is a ripoff. I have a satellite TV company. When I signed up with them, you know, you get all that free stuff. You get movies. You get NFL Network that you never watch. And then you come find out you're still paying for it. So you call them, say, I don't want this stuff. Three different times now I have called them. I don't want the NFL package. Take that off. Oh, yeah, we'll take care of that. And they never have. And the problem is it's not on every bill because it's billed, you know, a couple times during the year. So I didn't know if there was any advice about how to deal with that.
Yeah, Michelle, you want to?
Well, yes. One way is to follow up in writing so you have documentation of the communication about the cancellation of those services. But you've tried a few times now, and so I would suggest that you do file a complaint with our agency so we can intervene and communicate with the satellite company to see what their practices are and why these cancellations aren't occurring. Sometimes canceling a service package, depending on where you are in a contract, can impact your bill and your service agreement as well, just for the other listeners, so they know that there can be a cost change if you change your service plan in the middle of a contract. But yeah, that doesn't seem the case here. So datcp.wi.gov, we have a complaint form that he can file directly online.
Perfect. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Brad. Karina in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Karina. Karina, are you there? Oh, we lost. I think we must have lost her. She had an interesting story about getting stuff, too. So call back, Karina. Rod in Weyerhaeuser, it's your turn. Hi, Rod.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sure thing.
Yeah, you know, I finally decided, I'm going to go and get a so-called smartphone. You know, none of them are smart. I don't care what anybody says, that piece of equipment. But anyhow, I got that symbol on there, you know, voicemail. And, in fact, I'm looking at it right here. It's, let's see here. Oh, now it says the contents are hidden. See what I mean? It would come up otherwise if I wasn't on the phone. But all of a sudden, now content's hidden.
Hmm.
See, just because I'm calling you, and so I know there's somebody doing some goofy stuff here, and I...
Oh! And then he just got cut off.
That phone's a little less smart than the others. No.
Well, I hope Rod's still listening. Michelle, what should he do?
So a couple things. I would try going online and finding the instruction manual for the type of phone that he purchased to see if there's a way to reset it, to clear out what looks like from the notes here that there may be a signal indicating there's a voicemail that doesn't really exist, or to clear that voicemail. And then if that doesn't work, there's probably a web page where you can submit a frequently asked question type to someone at the basis to troubleshoot and go from there. And I think a third thing would be to actually make the phone call and communicate with the company that way on clearing out the phone and doing a factory reset or something.
Yeah, or even go back to the where you bought it and get it.
Yeah, potentially Walmart may be behind the phone as well and maybe accept a return if it's a defective product.
Clyde in Aiken, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Clyde.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm going to hit this from a little different angle. It seems like I've been listening to your program. The burden is falling back on the victim, whether it's to correct a problem they didn't create or to recover a little bit of money on a rebate or to figure out who's trying to scam them. And it's always about money. And when you consider time as money, I would think that the time spent sometimes isn't even worth what you may recover. But here's my point. With all this technology and the high-pressure sales to upgrade to the newer smartphones and the tablets and all the other stuff that's out there, shouldn't the burden go back on the technology that's out there? And shouldn't the system be ahead of the criminal to firewall this stuff and prevent it so that the burden of people not, that are not in tune with how to deal with all this and take their precious time to make phone calls and do all this stuff, why should we have to deal with this stuff and correct problems we don't create? This technology has just opened up a flood of people that have nothing better to do than to steal and lie.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and Sandy, you mentioned earlier that some of that is going to be is being put back on the companies themselves.
As you were talking about, by having this group come in and talk about potential technological solutions to the robocalls. Yeah, that's a great point. And technology makes it possible for somebody halfway around the world to call you on your telephone in your house, you know, which is not a good situation. And it sets up opportunities for extortion as well, like the ransomware type software. The thing is, we've already seen it with the chip and PIN credit cards. Criminals will find a vulnerability in any technological solution, no matter what it is. And part of the what falls on businesses is spending the money to keep ahead of the criminals. So it is an endless cycle here. I think he's absolutely right.
And so we're seeing some problems with the new chip cards as well?
Well, they're not foolproof.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And they're certainly safer than the old cards with the magnetic
yeah.
strip. But you know it won't be long before we have some kind of data breach involving chip and PIN cards. I mean, they've already found one way to do it. But it will happen.
Yeah. Paul in Marshall, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, you were talking a little while ago about blocking unwanted calls.
Yeah.
And I was without my landline for 5 days about a month ago. It was a problem in the wire. Finally got the phone company to fix that. But in the meantime, not knowing that it was, I bought a new phone system. And on this new phone, there's a button on the lower right-hand corner that actually says call block. And when you get one of these calls from a finance company or auto insurance or one of those, you can just touch that button, and then up on the screen on the phone it says block this call, and then there's another button you push to say yes, and that call has been blocked.
Yeah.
And it's extremely convenient.
Yeah. Michelle, sounds pretty right. convenient.
Right. It's one of those off-the-shelf alternatives for individuals who have a landline versus a cell phone versus voice over internet protocol, the VoIP. So there are technological solutions that people can invest in, but you have to press that button. No more robo. It's happening behind the scenes for you. So, but there's options for people with the equipment that they have in their houses.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Paul, for letting us know. Sue and McGuanigo, it's your turn. Hi, Sue.
Oh, hi. I have a question about a recurring charge on my credit card because I'm supporting a certain nonprofit organization. And they constantly send me letters saying, change from your credit card to an EFT, which is an electronic funds transfer. And my question to you is, what is safer, to have the charge go to my credit card and unfortunately the organization will have to pay the credit card charge, but on the other hand, do I really want my banking information, my account number, my routing number floating out there wherever?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are exactly the questions that need to be balanced. I don't know that we can speak to the safety of one or the other because we don't know what security system the charity has in place for doing it, how they maintain and update their equipment, and those types of situations. But those are the same questions I'd be asking myself. My credit card, it's contained, someone to dispute the facts with. My bank, they have my routing. What do I need to change if that ends up in a breach situation? And do that balance test of how you want to handle that. Do you want to be in control of handing it over or have someone else in control of your stuff and taking it away?
Yeah, it's me. I put it on my card. That's what I do. Just be, even though I know it's going to cost a little more, I do it on the card.
Yes, I agree with you, Larry. Okay, thanks for the answer.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Karina in Wausau, thanks for calling.
Yeah. Question. I have a large amount of items from my parents and grandparents, all deceased. Far too many things than I can save for myself or my children. And I engaged in a business relationship with a local company that has a storefront that sells antiques, and then they also sell a lot online and also through Etsy. We started this probably about two and a half years ago, went very well for a while, and suddenly they've kind of gone underground and returned no phone calls, and I cannot reach them at all. And so they have all of my stuff.
Oh, all right, so Michelle, what do you do?
Depending upon the type of agreement you had on that consignment, you may need to enlist the help of a private attorney to contact them on your behalf for any private action that you may need to take. If they've truly disappeared and doors are locked, there's a possibility you could call your local law enforcement, but not sure how they would step in. We can always try and mediate, but we don't have any authority in those types of situations where they have the goods, but sometimes our contacting has helped open those lines of communication. So three options for you. If you want to file the complaint with us, again, that's at datcp.wi.gov.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Don in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I always love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share a story I had with an experience in applying for a mortgage at a large banking concern in Wisconsin here. It's more of a buyer beware sort of a thing. I'm sure everything they did was legal, but it seemed to me to be as predatory as anything you're talking about here today. I finished a vacation home in the Eagle River area, and we had a construction loan on it, my wife and I. And we completed everything, and we decided because the rates were so favorable, we wanted to go and get a fixed rate on it. So we went to a bank, and I was getting a 15-year fixed rate on it. We kind of breezed through the whole mortgage process on the thing. We're fortunate to have good credit and everything. But when I got the mortgage document, it seemed extremely long. They were very stringent about the mortgage process, and I thought, well, maybe that's the way things are because I haven't really applied for a mortgage in a while. But we got the document, and it was pretty lengthy. And it was one of those time is of the essence things to sign it. So I thought, well, I'm going to take some time to read this. And to the, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 pages of the thing, most of the document concerned my wife and I yielding our consumer protection rights where the law allowed the bank to do that. And there was page after page of that. And the very last page, which I thought was the most unusual, is the bank actually included a document that would appoint itself attorney in fact over that property. And it was followed by a paragraph that the bank or any of its agents could inspect the property at any time, could order repairs or maintenance to the property as they saw fit, and then add that apparently to the balance of the mortgage. Mm-hmm. And I can just see this being, you know, so ripe for abuse. I just thought I'd call and share that story. I refused it. I ended that process. I didn't sign that document, of course, but I ended that process. But I wanted comments from your guests to see if I tried going through the Financial Reform Act, the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act, to try to pinpoint if what they're doing here is legal or not, and it's kind of hard to navigate. So I just wanted comments from your guest to see if she's heard of anything like this or if this is a fairly common practice. And I'll just take your comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Michelle or Sandy?
Well, I'm sorry to say, Don, that the Department of Financial Institutions is the one that regulates mm-hmm. the lending and that aspect of things, again, with the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau at the federal level. And so they would be the ones to comment on that. But the one thing I want to applaud him on is reading that entire document and finding all that, not just signing it. That's a practice that's great no matter what you're about to sign, what contract. So Department of Financial Institutions, if you want to follow up and question that, is a state agency.
It seems pretty...
It seems a stretch, but I don't know what those regulations are to know if they're within their bounds on that lending or not, or if they're in gray area. I just don't know.
Oh, there we go. Thanks again for calling. And Anita in Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that because Wisconsin is a marital property state, there are national companies that do business in Wisconsin, and in my case, it was a telecom that provided telecom services to our house and internet, and they had a deal when I got a phone that said if you combine your cell phone with your home, we can give you a $10 discount to combine your billing. And when I went to avail that discount, the national company said, well, we can't do that for you because your husband's name is on the home phone and your name is on the cell phone. And I said, we're a marital property state. We are the same. You know, he's taking on the debt of my cell phone and I'm taking, you know, and he's the major wage earner. But I felt that that was a violation of the marital property rules for Wisconsin, for them to say, I'm not a party to my home phone bill. Because my name isn't on it.
Well, let's get a response. Andy, do you want to take that?
That's a real trend in the industry, obviously, to bundle different services on one contract. And Michelle and I would have to read through your contract and compare that against the state law to answer the question in any detail. But so that's all we can say at this point.
Is there any, I mean, should you, if you're married, should you be putting both names on things?
You certainly can. That can, I've seen situations from own friends and family where if then something happens to the other one, you have less of an issue in making access to that bill. But I know in writing up wills and things, you're trying to give electronic power, even though there's a marital property to one another's electronic email accounts. There's still some privacy rights that, regardless of being married, that individuals have that I think come into play with contracts and things. So I know that, you know, in our law, they give tattletale letters. If you go out and finance something, they're going to alert your spouse to it mm-hmm. because you are responsible. But individual contracts can still be signed by people.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it, Anita. We have the Zika virus. We haven't had any Zika mosquitoes here yet, I don't think. But there's all kinds of products out there that say we'll kill the Zika mosquito. How do you tell if they do what they're promised to do?
Yeah, and I've been getting really suspicious-looking spam-type email about Zika, so who knows what that's loaded with, ransomware-type malicious software, probably. The feds are really concerned about fraudulent advertising when it comes to Zika. So look at the CDC website, Centers for Disease Control, on Zika and what is truly effective against that before spending a lot of money on a miracle repellent.
And let's go back over. I think we've posted anything quickly at the end here.
Yeah, we want to just talk about everything we've talked about here today. We've summarized into a 10 tips to avoid fraud fact sheet that we just released today.
Oh.
So you can go on our website or you can go and call us and we'll send it out to you. But it's just real short bullet points, the 10 tips to avoid fraud.
So that's again at 800-422-7128 or go to datcp.wi.gov and you'll get all that information. You can get it online. Yeah.
Yep.
Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers will be back on October 6th, what I have here, and I think that's right, of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Always great to have them along, and they'll be back in a month and we'll talk some more. And Boy, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.